This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment. The website is mbeinstitute.org. There are various buttons at the bottom of every page which enable one to find out information about the Institute and the website. There is also a very extensive menu in the top left corner of every page, and the header, which is the top section of every page, includes a variety of links to some of the most popular pages on the website. The title to this extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Institute is Identity: Found, Lost, Stolen. In our individual consciousness, we have no identity until we find what is already there permanently, which is directly a reflection of the one and only omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, omniaction, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. The definition of good was already given, but it wasn't identified, so I will repeat it here. Good, God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, Omniaction. Another definition from the glossary is man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Definition of mind: the only I or us, the only spirit, soul, divine principle, substance, life, truth, love, the one God, not that which is in man, but the divine principle, or God, of whom man is the full and perfect expression, deity, which outlines but is not outlined. It is highly recommended in any study within the textbook or Mary Baker Eddy's other writings that one reads the three introductory quotes and out with Gita, the Scriptures, which is the textbook of Christian Science. The three introductory quotes are as follows. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. 2. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. And 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. So before we even begin studying anything in the textbook, she is telling us that the number one priority is to be looking for truth. I was an usher at a lecture one time on Christian Science, and I was very young, just gotten out of college, really wet behind the ears. And he said, I like what Mary Baker Eddy says most of the time, But I'm really confused when she gives a contradiction about some of her terms. At that time in my development of Christian Science, I had no idea what he could be referring to, and so I referred him to the lecturer, which had stayed for taking questions and answers and shaking hands with people that attended the lecture. But of course, looking back on it now, it's very easy to understand what he was talking about, because Mary Baker Eddy discusses different topics with multiple levels within each topic. Very common in the textbook. On page 115 and 116, she describes the four levels of consciousness. Three of them are mortal mind, and one is immortal mind. Obviously, the immortal mind is the highest level, because that's talking about God and idea and man, whereas the lower levels are talking about different levels of mortal consciousness. And the lowest is depravity. So the worst evils you can think of are in there. And of course, as you work up to the higher levels, she calls them degrees, then you're elevating thought toward the immortal mind level. Mary Baker Eddy states that Jesus needed to go through the different levels of mortal mind in order to reach the immortal mind level. And it's because we are barraged constantly with temptations to be diverted from the truth about what God is and what man is. And of course, after Jesus spent 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, and therefore would have been expected to be at his weakest point, he was tempted by the devil in three different categories. Everyone experiences the suggestion of mortal mind trying to get into one's consciousness. And of course, mortal mind operates based on mocking truth. And it's based on deception and trickery. Therefore, it tries to be as close to truth as possible. So sometimes we could be fooled into thinking that we are really looking at truth when in fact we are looking at a deception and not the real McCoy. One of the primary words to help define soul is identity. We normally think of the five senses as the way to identify anything, which is the seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. When we think of those five terms, are we thinking of the spiritual sense of them, or the more commonly accepted material sense of them? One of Mary Baker Eddy's students said she was working on a vision problem and wondered what Mary Baker Eddy might be able to tell her that would assist her, because it didn't seem to be yielding. And Mary Baker Eddy said, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" In other words, we need to have a model that we build within our consciousness that is a model of perfection that we can turn to as an immediate aid to making sure we are going to be towing the line in our thought. And of course, that model could very easily be built up of some of the definitions that have been recited in this prayer treatment. What are we thinking of about God and about man? How are we thinking about the way we see, hear, feel, smell, and taste? Richard Oakes compiled some statements credited to Mary Baker Eddy, which are unpublished writings. In other words, these writings were not authorized or authenticated by Mary Baker Eddy as one of her 16 published books, but they are believed to be statements that she made. And on page 222, it defines the spiritual senses as follows. Sight, spiritual discernment. Hearing, spiritual understanding. Feeling, divine consciousness. Smell, intuition of character. And taste, relish of truth. There are five pages that follow that provide related information about the senses and how to properly identify utilizing our spiritual senses. On the website, which is mbeinstitute.org, as mentioned in the introduction, in the header, which is on every page of the website up at the top, there is a button entitled Featured Topics and Authors Index. And if you click on that, and then if you click on Topic Categories Featured, then you will see that there is a button for the five spiritual senses, and it will lead you to the kind of thing that I'm talking about in relation to the references from the Blue Book. The five spiritual senses are also available from the menu under Topics. If we build a model that we can immediately refer to whenever there is a suggestion of a mortal mind temptation of diversion from staying on track on the path of truth. By the way, Mary Baker Eddy indicates that infinite progression is concrete being. There is nothing static in the system of divine metaphysics, which is just really another name for Christian Science. We always must be making progress. And Mary Baker Eddy quotes as one of the introductory quotes, in fact, this is the chapter 14, which is recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. She quotes Isaiah, wherein it is stated, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And she's giving us, I believe, the reminder that we shouldn't try to accomplish everything in one day or in one session of studying, but just try to grasp one step, one little truth that we can cling to and add to our reservoir of understanding of divine science. Compounding is the appropriate key word that one can refer to, and they can benefit from compounding by just adding a little bit each day and increasing their base of understanding so that the next moment that they increase their understanding, they're adding to an increased base. And therefore, their forward movement is not a linear, but a compounded geometric curve. Therefore, gaining a little bit each day in the right direction will have a very impactful influence on our growth. The key is consistency and persistency along the path of truth. One of the key things to think about in soul is to make sure that we separate personality from the individual, no matter what it is, whether it's a thought, an event, or an actual person. If we identify with qualities, then it will be a permanent identification. The individual could be visible or invisible, and the individual could be us. It could be anything, anyone. A longtime excellent Christian Scientist asked me what I thought was the proper way to think about body. I was very young at the time, and I didn't really understand what she was talking about. And she says, your body is everything about you. Life is your schoolyard. And it doesn't matter whether it is a thought, speech, or action. And it doesn't matter whether it's about you or someone else. It could be any event. It's everything in your experience from the beginning to now. And by beginning, she's talking about our consciousness of human life. She says that is your body. The son of an individual that was the founder of a very interesting organization about Christian Science, who does very fine service to humanity in what they offer, he said, think of your body as your servant, your office boy. Back in those days, he was referring to something probably, I don't know, probably 50 or 75 years ago. And he said, you tell the office boy what you want him to do. Now, of course, well, now it's back to men, but it used to migrate to women, being the assistants in an office that would act as a secretary or an assistant to one of the other staff. It could be the president or anyone that would have other people under his purview. But we need to get things done, and how are we going to do it? Frederick L. Rawson says we should work toward doing everything mentally that needs to be done physically. He certainly demonstrated that in a number of different ways. He was in a shooting contest, and he had never handled the rifle that he was given to use, and he felt the only way he could manage harmony was to not think about the material aspect, other than the fact that it was a joyful opportunity to show perfection. And so he held the gun up, and then he turned his head aside and closed his eyes. And he thought about God and the relationship between God and his idea man. And since God was the source and God was perfect, that there's not a single action of man that could be imperfect. And this could be applied to anything at all. Because if one has a harmonious concept of God, and that God is all there is, and the kingdom of heaven is the only existence and the only place there is, then any action within that concept of the kingdom of heaven would be manifested in harmony, balance, and an example of perfection. And when that was clear in his thought, without turning his head or opening his eyes, he still turned away from the target. He pulled the trigger, and it was a bullseye. He ended up winning the tournament. And he had a couple of students of his that were with him, and they did the very same thing. They demonstrated perfection in hitting the bullseye by having their eyes closed and their head turned away from the target. He was a wonderful teacher because when someone had a problem, he would clarify what they should work on if they weren't going along the right track, but he wouldn't do the work for them because they were students and he wanted them to learn. He discovered how to heal back in time. And he said that since God is perfect and that time is a relative measurement, that it could not be anything to do with God. In fact, he said, he's from the UK, and he said the educational system over there used to teach that there was no time. Somehow they convinced whomever to stop doing that. But he figured that if they were teaching that and they stopped it, he didn't have to stop it. And so he would start by first of all stating that everything was possible to God. And we have more details on this, and you can get it from the website by just going to either the featured author page where he is listed, or under the menu we have an alphabetical listing of 100 plus authors, and you can find it there. Going back in time, imagine what impact that could have. Any kind of suffering or bad thoughts that one might have about their life or their experience of the problem would absolutely be wiped out of consciousness, because you're going back before you experienced whatever experiences you had that were unfavorable about the problem. That's what we need to do about anything that is imperfect in our life or experience, is to go back in time before it was even a problem. And you can actually be capable of doing this if you have the spiritual level that he had, and of course Mary Baker Eddy had, and other fine advanced students. Joel Goldsmith walked into one of the nursing homes. He was called there by one of their patients and was asked to come over for help. So he walked into the reception area and she said, "Why are you here?" And he told her. They said, "You can't go in there. If you go in there, you'll have a big problem, because everyone in the whole building has the same problem, and it's contagious. If you go in there, you'll come out with the problem." He said, "How many do you have in there?" And she told him it was several hundred. He said, "Well, you only have one problem. You don't have however many it was, problems. You only have one." He went over and sat down in the reception area for a few minutes. And pretty soon, the nurses started coming out to the reception area and asking, "What happened? Everyone is healed, and all at once, at the same time. There are no symptoms at all of the problem that they had just a few minutes ago." He obviously had to go back in time. He had to see them only as they were before they had a problem. When Jesus saw Tabitha, who he raised from the belief of death, and Lazarus, he made the statement that they're not dead, but they sleep. when he saw the gentleman on the roadway that was blind from birth. His disciples said, "Who did sin, this man or his parents?" He said, "Neither." But we have an opportunity here to show the power of God. That's a paraphrase. So he looked at everyone as being perfect. He always had the perfect model in thought of everything and every event. And he utilized that as his foundation to deny that there could be any power in anything that was discordant. He was not letting their identity be lost, but he was revealing it within his own consciousness. And no one, he wouldn't permit anyone or anything to steal it, because he was going to stick to it. Just like Mary Baker Eddy told her student, "Can you focus no matter what comes your way?" Can we focus? Are we looking at the spiritual qualities of the individual? That same longtime friend that talked about body, she said, qualities, all are qualities. I visited her and her husband one time. I lived about 1,000 miles away at the time, and I had arranged to, since I was going to be in the town where she and her husband lived, I arranged to, you know, come to their home. And it was in the summer during Summer Olympics. And when I came to the door, she says, "We're watching the Summer Olympics. Would you like to watch it for a few minutes?" And so, of course, I did. And I sat down with them and enjoyed it. And at the time, the activity of gymnastics was the event being featured. And she made one comment. She says, "Look at the grace that young lady is symbolizing." She automatically thought not of how difficult this must be, or how beautiful the girl must be, or how she was doing it better than someone else. She just admired the grace, the quality of grace. There was an instructor, a coach of a girls' high school team that was a running team, and they were running the 400 meter dash. They had lost every game the prior season, and they hired her as the new hope to make improvement. And she accepted the challenge, and she started at the very foundation, and she determined what would be a slow time for running the 400 meter. And she said, "This is the time that I want you to run this when you're practicing." And she clocked everyone on the team, and they individually took a lap. And she said, "I want you to run this," and she told them how many seconds. And when they finished, if they were too fast or too slow, she would send them out again, until they could feel the pace that they needed to establish to comply with her instruction. So she had them run that way for a few days, and then she would take it up a notch. And she says, "Now when you run, Don't ever think about, is it too fast or too slow, or how fast is someone else running, or is there someone to my left or my right or behind me or in front of me that I need to catch up with? She taught them to run their race, which was how she defined the way she wanted them to run and the pace at which she wanted them to run. She says, don't pay attention to anyone else. Now, that's what we have to do about our thoughts. If we're going to have the perfect identity of ourselves and anyone else that may touch our experience, which, of course, we shouldn't be thinking of very much at all, because, as Mary Baker Eddy states, we will keep plenty busy managing our own consciousness without being concerned with someone else. So let everyone work out their own salvation, and you need to work out your salvation focusing on your consciousness. Don't think about anyone else in the race. That's their business. Your business is your race. Not anyone else, anytime, under any circumstance. So she notched them up one at a time, and they started qualifying in some of these events at the lower level, first of all within her own team and so forth, and she would keep notching them up, because what she was doing was building up their endurance and to practice running the same pace from the time they got out of the starting blocks until they finished the race. It wasn't start out fast and then be worn out, or start out slow and then try to have a burst at the end. It was a steady pace all the way through. And she kept reminding them, don't pay attention to anyone else on the track, period. And it didn't matter what the weather was, rain or shine, they were out there. Didn't matter. 7 days a week. They finally worked themselves up to the state championship, where they qualified. She gave them the same instruction. You don't pay attention to anyone else on the track. You've been practicing this the whole season. And the only thing you need to be concerned about is running the pace that I taught you to run. And that's your only thing to think about. You have no competition. You have no opposition. There's no one else on the track. Except if there's someone in front of you, make sure that you're not going to run into them and cause a problem. That's the only place you look, is straight ahead. And the only thing you think about is the pace that you are running. And when the race was all over, they looked for her. She had gotten them started, and she gave them a pep talk at the beginning, telling them what the instruction was, reminding them, and then she could see that they were running the pace that she had trained them to run. And then she left. She wasn't looking for any compliments, any accolades of any kind whatsoever. She just wanted to make sure that they were going to run the race that she had taught them to run. Not a race of competition against other individuals, but the race of perfection. She wanted them to identify with a spiritual approach. She didn't say this, and this was not advertised of anything to do with Christian Science. But that's what she was really doing. She was teaching them the science of the principle of how to properly train and run an event. Not to compete with someone else, but only to compete with perfection. Strive for perfection without exception. So they couldn't find her. She was gone. She had accomplished her goal. She didn't care whether they won or lost. They were not supposed to care whether they won or lost. They were supposed to care about, did they run the race they were supposed to run? What a beautiful lesson. I saw that movie several years ago, and I thought I'd saved the video, but I haven't been able to locate it on my computer system, and of course I've changed computers several times since then, and hard drives, and archived things, and I guess I just didn't properly title it, because I should be able to get to anything immediately if it's properly titled and categorized and in the proper folder structure. And if it's titled, you should be able to find it through any number of different searching software. But I will never forget the movie. I remember a lot of details about it, and I think of it often, and I mention it in a number of prayer treatments, because that's what every day is. It's us identifying in a spiritual way, which of course is perfection, because certainly a material way doesn't offer anything that is perfect. It only offers a roller coaster ride and trickery and deception, false hopes. Someone asked Kurt Russell, who is a lifelong actor. He began when he was a young boy. They asked him how he compared his life to the characters he played in movies. He said, well, my life is real. He said, movies are fantasy land. Mary Baker Eddy tells in Science and Health about a man that was in a play, and he was in very poor health, and he hobbled to the building where they were performing the play. And he would sit in his chair waiting to be called for when his part was coming up. And when he got out of his chair and went up on stage, he acted like as young as the youngest one in the whole company. He acted his real self from a scientific viewpoint. And when he was hobbling to where he was going to perform, the theater, that was fantasy land. All he had to do was to switch his thought, knowing that the fantasy was the problem and reality was the way it was when he was on stage. Do we think like Kurt Russell that our life is real and the movies are fake? They're fantasy land? John, the disciple, asked Jesus, is there a material body? And then he asked him, is there a material world? We have a page that gives the answer, and it's in a museum in England, and it's under 24-hour guard. The document that gives the answer. It's supposed to be the original, something original. whether it's a piece of stone, whether it's etched in, I don't recall offhand, but anyway, he gives the answer. Very interesting. It's worth reading. Jesus gave us 41 parables. What is the most significant thing about those parables to get your thought into the right frame of consciousness before you read them is to know that they are totally impersonal. When he was teaching, he didn't identify individuals in a materialistic way. He identified them as qualities that were the reverse of the problem that he healed. He saw the unreality of the false identity. He would claim the true identity. He would found it within his own consciousness. And he wouldn't lose it. And he would not let it be stolen by accepting what apparently was a materialistic visual that indicated that they were not perfect. None of the people that he healed did he look at as being imperfect. He loved children because they were receptive to his Christly thought. They had such a degree of innocence that they didn't have what needed to be overcome by adults that had been subjected to a false sense of reality. Can anybody steal one's identity if they do what Mary Baker Eddy suggested to the lady that was wanting help in solving the problem about vision? Can you focus no matter what comes your way? Can we do that? Can we focus no matter what comes our way? Or are we going to just flop around and be passive and let the mesmeric beliefs control our thought, speech, and action? Jesus said that what we think is the same as doing it. When Jesus was asked a question, the Pharisee said, "Good master," and then asked the question. And he said, "Why call me good? There is one good, and that is God." I read the definition to you of what good was from the glossary. I'll repeat it here. Good. It's on page 587. Good, God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, Omniaction. That covers a lot of territory. No other power, because God is omnipotent. Omni means one, only, and all. Omniscience means all science. All science. There is no science unless it is the science of God. Everything else is a finite science. The only science that is infinite is the science of God. Omnipresent? Could Jesus be God when he was here in the form of a man? Could he be omnipresent? Omniaction. Since God is omniaction, there can't be any premature action or delayed action or diluted action or diverted action or action that is stopped or reversed. We cannot identify any activity at all as having any of those mesmeric diversions. Otherwise, we are not giving ourselves an opportunity to be the image and likeness of God. Are we going to reflect God or not? We have to focus, because we're inundated with false suggestions about who we are, our identity. Are we letting the spiritual senses be our senses? Are we discerning the difference between one thing and another, which is the seeing? In other words, can we tell the difference between good and evil? Between truth and error? Between mind that is immortal and a so-called fake, which is mortal mind, which Mary Baker Eddy calls an oxymoron? Can we tell the difference between spirit and matter? Material senses and spiritual senses, principle and chaos, life that is eternal and life that is just a busy day of so-called material activities, going here and there and rushing about and getting nowhere in our spiritual development? Are we staying on the path of truth? Remember the quote from John, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Free of anything that is not spiritual. Free of anything that is not true about God. Free of anything that is not true about God's reflection. Are we believing any of that? Are we keeping our motive pure so that our thought, speech, and action is pure? Are we seeing everyone else as the idea of God? What identity are we giving to other people? Does their name mean something important to us? A name of a so-called body that is made up of flesh? Are we seeing the spiritual body and giving them a name that is the spiritual qualities that they express? Are they doing good things? That's not our business. Everyone is doing good things. Are we seeing it? If we're going to think about someone else, we better be thinking about the good things they're doing and not criticizing. Dr. Fluno traveled around as one of the earliest lecturers for Mary Baker Eddy, and one of his main topics that he discussed was criticism. He says criticism leads to all evil. Can you imagine that? All evil. Mary Baker Eddy prayed hourly during her waking hours, which I would imagine would probably be around 18. That means 18 times a day she was praying to make sure that everything she was thinking about and everyone she was thinking about was a reflection of perfection. She had to examine her consciousness in order to make sure that her focus was on one thing and one thing only. And that is, there is nothing but God. Frederick L. Rawson, the one that discovered how to treat back in time, wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In it, there's a chapter entitled Applied Treatment. He covers 1,315 different ailments. If you know a so-called materialistic name for an ailment, it's probably going to be listed in that applied treatment section. And if you're having problem with it, it's highly suggested that you take a look at it. It's in alphabetic order. Everything's on the website. Just go to Rawson, Rawson, in the index of authors, and you will find 1,413 items. You can search through an alphabetical menu to find it very quickly. And usually there are other related things to the ailment. So you should follow up by looking up anything else that it mentioned that is related to it. And notice what he says is the spiritual opposite of the ailment. It's highly recommended you do not read that chapter from beginning to end, because you do not want to fill your thought with 1,315 problems. And that's what you would do. Wentworth Winslow said, if you have a problem, don't be dwelling on the problem, because pretty soon you'll be thinking of another problem. In other words, let's say you had some kind of an ache internally. Pretty soon you'll be having another one. He was called upon, and he was around before telephones were available, and he got a telegram from someone that said, 6 treatments, please. He had a name, apparently, of the individual that sent the telegram, but that's the only information he knew. He didn't even know for sure where they were located, except it came from South America. He was a resident in New York. He was healed of a problem that he had. This is Mr. Winslow. And he was not expected to live. And when he was healed through Christian Science, he decided that he would make his life of being a Christian Science practitioner. He wrote 4 books, all very short titles, and they are filled with articles that he wrote on, I think it's 126 topics. So, you know, maybe around 40 topics per book. He healed a boy that had passed on from the belief of death. So he got this telegram, and he said, where do I begin? He had no way to contact him. And he decided the best way to approach it was working on spirit. And he said, the only way I can think of that I can be of assistance is to live a life of spirit that is as pure of which I can conceive. Anything at all in my activities, I must make sure that I'm just as spiritual as I can be in the way I'm thinking, talking, and doing it, carrying it out. And we've been taught in Christian Science that that will not only transform ourselves, but it will rest upon anyone who's our thought touch, who's our thought touches. So that's what he did. 6 treatments, please. So he just kept working. I don't know that he paid any attention to how many treatments, but doesn't say that. And then he got another telegram, and he said, 6 more treatments, please. And he thought to himself, the only thing I know to do is continue on what I'm doing. And so that's what he did. Later, he was able to have communication with the fellow. So apparently he sent him some kind of communication to let him know where he was and what his name was and what the problem was. And he said the problem was insanity. It was for a friend, and it was insanity. And the first 6 treatments healed the case. But I asked for 6 more because no one around him believed that he had been healed. So we had to heal the thought of other people that were an influence on him, because they wouldn't release him and let him go. His articles are very insightful, and it covers some 35 years of being a very fine Christian Science practitioner. If you think about Frederick L. Rawson and Joel Goldsmith and Wentworth Winslow, all 3 of which have been mentioned here, they all had 15-minute appointments. And when the 15 minutes was over, the patient left healed. They were able to convey enough spirituality to embed it in the consciousness of the individual, give them the understanding they needed, that they were so uplifted that the problem was dissipated, totally dissipated. Mr. Winslow talks about one article that's called The Mining Engineer. And he came to him, and he just didn't know what to do. He didn't have a job. He had obligations at the bank that were due. He'd been out of work. And he just had no idea what to do. So in desperation, he went to see someone that had a reputation of being of assistance. After he left the office, he was walking down the street. He thought of a letter he had in the jacket he was wearing. He'd carried it around with him for 2 or 3 years. And it was an introduction, and it was signed by somebody well known in the industry of mining engineering. And it was signed by him, introducing him to someone else that was one of the top people in the industry. Every day, when he got dressed, he made sure that letter was in his jacket, whatever he was wearing. But he never thought about using it. And when he visited Mr. Winslow, the enlightenment turned a switch on. And when he left Mr. Winslow's office, he walked right over to the individual's office, which apparently was in the city, and handed him the letter. The individual to whom it was addressed said, "I am so grateful for you to be here. I know this man that signed your introduction letter. I know his reputation. And if he recommends you, that's all I need to know that I can't get anybody any better." So he gave him the job on the spot. And it was in another country that they needed to travel to develop this mine. He needed to be awakened to realize he had the letter and to utilize it. So often, we think we are in need of something and we have exactly what is needed and we're not aware of it. I was in business for many years, and often I was looking for someone that had special talents in a particular area. And our office would go through the normal procedure in personnel management to try to find the right person. Various things they did in advertising and so forth. More than once, I realized later that I knew someone that would be exactly the right person for the job. But I was blind to it, just following normal business procedures. That I didn't let the intuition of thought that the five senses are telling us, or one of the senses, that we should be utilizing as a spiritual sense. Spiritual intuition. If we can conceive of a need, the supply is already there. Because how could we define a need without being able to define the supply? We wouldn't be able to define it because they're mutually dependent on each other. That means that supply and demand is always in balance. But we have to claim it. We have to accept it. Several times Jesus asked the individual before he healed him, "Do you believe? Do you have faith that you can be healed?" He spent his original time in an effort to heal people in Galilee. It was not very successful. They thought of him as a boy or as a carpenter because that's where he was raised. And he spent 30 years of his life before he started his healing ministry. That's why it is not uncommon for someone that is successful to a high degree moves from an area where they were not successful, because that's really a stigma on their reputation. Anyone who's been highly successful knows that you can be beaten down a lot of times before you're successful. We have a short video by a famous actor . It's on the website. And he says life will beat you down to your knees. And it will hold you there if you let it. The movies that he became famous from were him being a fighter, a boxer. But he was talking about his real life. Sylvester Stallone is the name that he goes by in the movies. Anyone that hears his voice relates him to the fighting that he did in the movies. But he's talking about his real life. You might think that someone that is successful in terms of financial or ranking above other people in the same profession and so forth, that it's all roses. But anyone who's been successful can tell you that they went through a lot of challenges before they got on top of their life. In Christian Science, we all have the same opportunity, and it doesn't matter who your parents were, who your brothers and sisters are, grandparents, doesn't matter where you lived, what your skin color is, what your education or background is, nothing matters. Wentworth Winslow came from a family that was very well known. But he had been given a prognosis that he wasn't going to live. He went to the best medical doctors there were. Look at Mary Baker Eddy. She was a frail person, such that she couldn't even attend school, hardly any. And her education was all done at home or on her own. She was turned out into the street in the cold of winter when people that she was renting a room from realized what she was doing, the kind of book she was writing, claiming that there's no life, truth, and intelligence in matter. Almost everyone that has made a great discovery had to fight everyone. Because the human mind does not accept change except very gradually and through tremendous amount of repetition. That's why the mainstream media that is trying to promote a lie has the text of what they want to have said in all the channels that they have control of, all the mainstream media that they have control of, which is all of them. They made the statement 50 years ago that their Project Mockingbird, they expected to be successful because they were now controlling all the mainstream media. There was a book published called Between Two Towers, and that's about the Christian Science organization, headquarters in Boston. The same problem. The temptation of money and control and status. Few people can stay focused because they think that those three things just mentioned, which was basically the three temptations of Jesus, they think that's everything. They're blind, as we all are from time to time, by letting the universal belief control us. The temptation is there constantly. It's floating in the atmosphere of thought. Are we going to let it get its foot in the door of our consciousness? One of the famous paintings of Jesus is him knocking on the door, knocking on a door. That's been described as being the door of consciousness to anyone that's going to listen or not listen. Are we going to open the door to the Christ consciousness, which is the God consciousness? On page 146, Mayer Baker Eddy says, "Divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system." On page 330, she says, "There are 32 planks to the platform. And if you understand and practice what is contained in those 32 topics, which covers only 11 pages out of a 700-page book, and you live the letter and the spirit, you will be able to demonstrate divine metaphysics. In other words, you'll be able to heal any problem that occurs. And how do we heal a problem? Certainly not focusing on the problem. Einstein tells us that if you want to solve a problem, you have to work from a dimension that is higher than where you discovered the problem. He said you'll never solve the problem if you're working on the same level as where the problem is. He says curiosity has its own way, own reason for existing. He says never stop questioning. And of course that's what the first quote in Science and Health is all about. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And we must remember Shakespeare, there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What are we going to be thinking about everything that's being presented to us? Are we going to use the spiritual senses to sort it out and filter it so that we're looking only at the spiritual senses and not the material sense in order to be identifying properly every little bit of information that's being presented to us? If we have a difficult problem, are we going to take the Ben Franklin approach and take a piece of paper and make a T on it, you know, dividing the left half from the right, and the top would just be labeling it? And everything that is an advantage, if we say yes on one side, and everything that is negative on the other, if we say no? Ben Franklin liked to make his decision by letting the facts make the decision. If you want to be able to heal everything, you have to have a consciousness that will let the truth create the atmosphere that is needed. You need to be so exhausted with a materialistic approach that you see you're getting nowhere. Richard Strain had that situation. He was working 18 hours a day, getting nowhere. He went to a practitioner. He told her his woes. "I'm so exhausted when I get home every day, all he can do is eat and whatever, probably take a shower and go to bed. Get up the next day and the same thing." She said, "Well, when are you studying?" He said, "I don't have time to study." She said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to work out of your problem." She said nothing else. So he was letting that churn around in his thought. And finally, he realized he had no choice. He didn't have any idea how he was going to do it. But if she said he had to do it, she had confidence. He had confidence that she knew what she was talking about. And he came there for the solution. I don't know whether he thought he could just ask her to take care of it and he would send her a check or what. He didn't say. But she made it very clear that if, number one, he didn't study 5 hours a day, forget it. You're not going to get anywhere. We have a very detailed plan on our website to tell you how to heal everything. And the key is not to think about healing. Think about your spiritual advancement, your spiritual understanding. And as you improve your spiritual understanding, healing comes automatically. And the more you get your thought off of the problem, the sooner the problem will be solved. You have to get it off of personality, which includes yourself and the problem, and get it onto spirit. You have to look through the lens of spirit for everything. You need to find your true identity and stick to it. You need to focus and don't let anything dilute your focus, period. Mary Baker Eddy gave a great gift to her final class in the Metaphysical College, and that was a class that she personally invited every single person to be there. And so she obviously selected her top students to try to catapult them into a higher dimension than where they were. On the third day of the class, she assigned them all to go out and come back the next day with something that they had healed. And they all did. Her expectations were fulfilled, and she had high expectations for everyone because she was giving them the straight truth. Are you ready to make a commitment? If you study how to heal everything, we give you all of the instructions you need to know. And you can't cut anything out. Otherwise, the bet is off. The bet being that you can heal anything you need to heal. If you vary from it, there's no mercy. And you have to start by living a life of giving. That's love. The very first thing in the chapter on Christian Science Practice is the story of Mary Magdalene. And like the second article in Miscellaneous Writings, which is like the second or third largest book she wrote, is about loving your neighbor. Love Your Enemies is the title. It starts on page 8 of Miscellaneous Writings. What was the one quality that Jesus exuded with more than anything else? L-O-V-E. The soldier, one of the soldiers that was in the group that came to arrest him, Peter cut his ear off out of anger. He lowered himself to a material base, cut his ear off. What did Jesus do? Put up thy sword, Peter. And he healed him. Is that love your enemies or not? So if you don't cultivate a characteristic of loving, cultivating loving everyone personally is for the birds. This is impersonally. Loving everyone impersonally. Focusing on chapter 1 of Genesis through verse 3 of chapter 2 instead of focusing on after the mist went up. And there went up a mist. Are we going to see clearly in a mist? That's Genesis chapter 2. That is Adam and Eve. That is the thing that says we're all born a sinner. Is that where we want to begin our concept of our true identity? Do we want to identify with that? Or do we want to identify with the truth about God's idea man, which is you and me and everyone else? Are we going to love our neighbor as ourself? We shouldn't even walk out of the house without being alert to how we can identify someone that has a need. I know someone that visits a store a few times a month, and there's a very pathetic situation of a woman with a daughter, probably 15, 18 years old, the daughter. She has no control of herself whatsoever. She has no idea what's going on around her. Giving money is the easy thing to do. I don't care how much you give them. You can give $1 million. That's the easy thing to do. But the person I know went up and talked to the mother. The daughter you couldn't communicate with. And talked to the mother. Yes, he gave them a generous donation. Probably more than they had ever gotten before in their life. And he visits that store several times a month, and he gives them the same large donation every time that they are there, which is almost every time he goes. But in addition, what he did is he said, well, how can I be of greater assistance than this? So he printed out the preface and chapter 1 of Science and Health. Gave it to him in a plastic sheet protector. Next time he went there, a few days later, she had a big smile on her face, the mother. She couldn't express gratitude enough for what he had done. She was grateful for the money, but she was more grateful for what she was reading about. So he printed out more chapters. He printed out chapter 18 on fruitage next. And then he delivered a binder. In fact, I think he said he printed out everything fresh again, and he made a binder with all of the, with everything in it. She gets up out of her chair where she's sitting there with her daughter. Every time she sees him, you know, get on the escalator to go up to the ground floor of the store. But before she would just sit there and say thank you. Once he started giving her Science and Health, she gets up immediately. What are we doing to help the people that are in need? Yes, giving them money is important, because if they're there begging, they obviously are in great need. I know of someone else that was coming out of a store, another instance, and he was approached, as he got to his vehicle, he was approached by someone that was begging for money. And it was a young man. He said probably in his 30s. And he said, well, why do you need money? He said, I haven't eaten in 2 days. I mean, he looked okay. You know, his hair was neat and he was looked clean clothes and so forth. You know, it looked like he was ready to go to work. And he said, I haven't eaten in 2 days. He says, I was relieved of my job. He didn't get into details about what that was all about, but he said, and I need money. He said, I don't even have money for gas to ride my vehicle. He said, I've got a two-wheeler, motorcycle. I don't even have money to go around and look for a job. And he lived only a few blocks from the store, so he didn't know what else to do. So the man asked him, he said, well, what do you do? What is your profession? He said, I'm a handyman. I can fix anything. I know electrical, plumbing, butane torch I can use, electrical, mechanical. I enjoy fixing things. And the guy said, you know, I've been accumulating a list of things that need to be done in my home. He asked him how close he lived, and he told him. He said, well, let's go over and get your vehicle and go to the gas station, and I'll fill up the tank. And come on up to the house, follow me, and we'll take a look at this list and see what you think. He ended up working for the guy 3 months. He kept him busy every day for 3 months. So instead of giving him enough food for the night or whatever he was going to do, he gave him a job. And when that was over, he had another job lined up to start the next day. Just because he took the time to find out what the problem was. I know of someone that he was visiting another place that he goes to, and there was a dog that was looking around for food. And I mean, this dog was so thin, he looked like he hadn't eaten in forever. I mean, he was in desperate condition. So he bought some dog food and the dog was gone. So he fixed a container and a container of water. And when he goes out, he keeps it with him in his vehicle. So that whenever he sees a stray dog, he gives him food and water. What do we do? Are we living a life of giving? Because if we're not living a life of giving, forget about trying to heal any problem. Mary Baker Eddy, Jesus, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, Frederick L. Rawson, they all began with love. Love. Cultivating a life of giving. And if you don't catch on to that as the key to begin and carry it throughout your whole life, then you're wasting your time with Christian Science. What do you think Christianity is? Do you think it's walking on the other side of the street so that you don't pass the guy with the story of the Good Samaritan? He's the only one that found out what his problem was. He took him to a hotel and set him up, and he gave him food and he left money to take care of him. And he said, I'll be back. If there's anything else owed, I'll take care of it, whatever. But the other people walked on the other side of the street so they didn't have to face the problem. There was a priest walked on the other side of the street. What is the one difference between Christian Science and every other religion in the universe? It is love. Living a life of love, which automatically brings healing. But you have to understand the scientific nature of the Bible. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy discovered. the science of the Bible, the science of healing, the science of how to live your life. And remember, she was living in an era, you know, the 1900s, 1820 was the year that she surfaced in visible form and left in 1910. So that 90 years, you couldn't own property. You couldn't vote. Jesus gave hillside meetings to 4,000 in one case and 5,000 in another, plus women and children. They didn't even count them as being human beings. So you probably figure there were 3 or 4 children to each family and a wife. So you're probably talking maybe 50 to 60 or 70,000 people in just 2 different meetings that he had. And he had several hundred disciples that he had appointed. And who came to his crucifixion? It said there were about 6 people that showed up out of the tens of thousands that he gave his life to. 6 people. Lazarus didn't show up. Tabitha didn't show up. Maybe Tabitha was too young to be out on her own, but her parents. Lazarus. That was supposedly, you know, that was the brother to Mary Magdalene and Martha. Mary Magdalene showed up. That was the sister of Lazarus, but Lazarus didn't show up. John was the only disciple. They put him in a pot of boiling oil. They didn't kill him. They exiled him to the island of Patmos. And what happened on the island of Patmos? Jesus reappeared in the flesh after his ascension and dictated the book of Revelation. Check out Robert C. Putnam on our website. Probably one of the finest next to Mary Baker Eddy of Bible scholars. His teacher was Bliss Knapp. Bliss Knapp had a mother who was experienced a tragic death when he was only, I guess it was 6 or 7 years old. And Ira Knapp, his father, was one of Mary Baker Eddy's first lecturers, along with Dr. Fluno. So Mary Baker Eddy took Bliss Knapp under her tutelage, gave him the finest education, and he was devoted solely to Christian Science his whole life. He was the teacher to Robert C. Putnam, who was a doctorate of chemistry. Anyone that is in chemistry has to be very methodical. He wrote a book called 10 Bible Lessons. The first 8 are on the Old Testament, the 9th is on Christ Jesus, and the 10th is on the second coming of the Christ. He gives you the facts about Jesus coming back and dictating the book of Revelation. He gives you all the quotations out of the Bible. It's only 169 pages and 10 lessons, but he gives you hundreds of pages of backup references all out of the Bible. That's in the first 9, and then the 10th, there's references from Mary Baker Eddy. Maybe some in number 9. I paid $800 just for one piece of software, and then another probably $1,000 to get software that goes with it to study the Bible. and boy, it was dry from one end to the other. They were supposed to be the best Bible scholars there were, but the problem is they didn't know anything about Christian Science, and they didn't know how to separate matter from spirit, the first chapter of Genesis from the second chapter of Genesis. And they didn't realize that the seven synonymous terms for God and the Ten Commandments and the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer all were in synchronization. And the Sermon on the Mount, all in synchronization with the days of creation. I'm telling you, until someone studies seriously Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, they're floating around in the dark. Nothing else offers an opportunity to be self-sufficient, independent, being able to work out your own salvation instead of depending on someone that has some kind of a degree in something. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's medicine or psychiatry or psychology, there's only one solution, and it's God. It's propounded by Mary Baker Eddy in her discovery of the science of Jesus' healings, the science of Christianity. And if we don't seriously look at the facts, we're going to go through our life missing what could be a total transformation from matter to spirit. We'll be missing our true identity. We will never find it. We will stay in the category of lost and stolen. Stolen by universal belief that we were born a sinner and that our progeny is Adam and Eve. I mean, how can any thinking person believe that they took a rib out of a man and made a woman? How can anybody believe that kind of stuff? How can anyone believe that Jesus is God when he himself says very specifically there is only one good, only one God? They just totally skip over it. And that's all explained by Dr. Putnam, the chemist, the student of Bliss Knapp. By the way, Bliss Knapp had an estate in the mid-1950s, I think it was, that was worth $350 million. He offered the whole thing upon his passing to go to the Mother Church. $350 million. Today, that would be a little over $4 billion. He'd be one of the wealthiest men. He did not work on investments. He worked on helping other people in healing and teaching Christian Science. We don't have to worry about anything in terms of our needs being met if we have a spiritual understanding. His book is on our website. The one that he gave $350 million if they would just publish it. And there's more to that story, so I won't get into it now. And an hour and 40 minutes on this extemporaneous treatment. All of the prayer treatments are extemporaneous. I may get an idea for the title, the topic, and then I just let it flow. Whatever comes to me, I tell it as it is. So it's not refined. It's not edited. When it's finished, it is converted to an MP3 from the software that is used to record it, and it's put up on the website. So you can pick it apart if you want to. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not changing it. The time to edit something is ridiculous. I gave up on trying to edit anything. You know, I listen to these after they're published, and I find something that's not as perfect as it should be stated. And I've tried to correct a couple of things, and it just, time-consuming is ridiculous. So I don't do it. A couple of them, I've made a statement at the end that I'd like to correct this or that. But out of the, I think I've done around 400. And out of those, I think I did that on maybe two or three. But I don't even do that anymore. So I announce it as being extemporaneous. And you have to understand that that's what it is. The way it comes to me, it comes to you. Good, bad, or indifferent. Or as that one movie by Clint Eastwood, Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Okay. As I started to say, Mary Baker Eddy in her final class gave seven treatments called the Diapason of Heaven. And I will select one and read it to you word for word, straight from the horse. And I will do that now. Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy. The title of this prayer treatment is Identity, Found, Lost, Stolen. And those obviously are a function of soul. So therefore, I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on soul by Mary Baker Eddy from her 1898 final class of the College on Metaphysics. We must hold soul in consciousness only as a sacred name for God. We have to rise above the belief that soul is an invisible personality residing in a fleshly form with a personal identity. Soul must be recognized as a name for God, and a name by which God is to be worshipped. We have to take the interpretation of soul as a personality out of subjective thought and replace it with the true sense. We should declare often, there is only one soul, and that is my infinite, incorporeal, supreme God. Soul is my God, and my God is soul. Amen. It is Tuesday, September 16, which is 25/09/16 at 16:15. And this has been an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. The website is mbeinstitute.org. And the title, Identity, Found, Lost, Stolen. Thank you for listening. The end.